This is The Impromptu, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. And now, your hosts for today, Michael Norton and Alex Knight, with special guest Jordan Cooper. Obviously, there's a new format for the show, Jordan. So we're not really focusing on tech, although we don't necessarily exclude tech topics. But we try to avoid anything like talking about predictions about new products and that type of stuff. So, yeah, let's try to keep it clean. Otherwise, Michael's going to have a lot of extra work to bleep out stuff.
I didn't bleep anything out last week.
You didn't? Oh, okay.
I didn't, no.
Yeah, you're right.
But I'll try to be on better behavior.
Okay. As long as we don't drop any F-bombs, I think it'll be okay.
Yeah, I think their explicit is like, yeah, I think that's where they draw the line. I'm not sure.
How does that work? Because it's not like they have people, like they don't have any kind of robot that...
I think it's like if someone complains maybe. Right.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
If it got reported and you didn't mark it as explicit, they may take it down.
Yeah.
Right. That makes sense.
We should be all right. I might just make the podcast explicit by default. There may be swearing in some episodes sort of thing. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. We'll see. I like seeing that little E badge. It looks cool.
It is pretty cool.
I'm used to seeing it.
It's like, yeah.
Yeah, I think you once tweeted, you can tell when I started recording these.
It's like right, when I was on the impromptu.
Yeah.
You start seeing the E there.
So some things have changed. So Jordan, you've got a new podcast, Dump.am. How's that going? I've been listening to it. It's pretty good.
Yeah. Clever URL.
It's clever.
Morning dump.
It's a clever theme song.
Yeah.
Well, I just got that on Fiverr.
Who did that song, by the way?
The Ukulele Bandito? Whatever, some random dude on Fiverr. That, you know, that you could go on Fiverr and people will do anything for $5. It's usually never $5.
Yeah.
You have to pay for like upgrades and stuff, and just go there. I'll make you a jingle for $5.
Nice. I didn't even know that site existed.
Yeah, and they can make don't get anything seriously made there.
Yeah.
A little one-off things like, you know, I'm going to do this little project or, you know, need this something for the weekend. You know, I need to make a little brochure for the little event that my kid is having this weekend type of thing.
Yeah.
And make a little logo and someone will just make it, or like a video intro, like for some type of presentation you're giving at a conference.
Right.
Like, yeah. Throw $5, $10 here. Here's my logo. Make it spin and do something with some sound effect and. Couple of days later, you get it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Is this a show?
I think so.
I don't know.
It could be.
It could be. Start over.
Well, we don't really have a defined start now that we have a pre-recorded intro. So,
Well, for those who are new, obviously they wouldn't have heard you on the last episode, so why don't we just do a little formal introduction. So Jordan, why don't you tell everybody who you are?
Hey, I'm Jordan Cooper, and I make fart jokes on the internet, essentially, kind of. Stand-up comic, whatever, podcaster, whatever. I'm just a person, I make jokes, I go on Twitter, don't take me seriously. Do a podcast every weekday, dump.am. And I I'm now averaging one podcast a day that comes out. Two weekly podcasts, daily weekday podcast. If you like cursing and technology and poop jokes, I'm your guy.
So that keeps you pretty busy. So how do you find the commitment to record every day? How do you keep yourself going?
It's not that hard. It really isn't. It doesn't take that much time. It's stuff that I would normally do as a comic anyway. When I did comedy full time, you're constantly thinking of new material. You're going out every night to an open mic or you have a gig, you know, Wednesday through Sunday somewhere in, you know, middle of Illinois or somewhere. So for me, this is just, I mean, that's what you do every day. You show up. You know, I mean, you never get better by just picking and choosing. It's like you show up, you do a show, 30 minutes, it's unscripted. Here's some tabs. Here's some funny things that happen in tech and stuff that I can kind of make fun of. And then you do it and you throw it out there. And then the next day is the next day. Mm. I mean, really, if you the only way you could get better is by showing up. And the only way you could ever develop an audience or do anything good is just by showing up. So with my work schedule, you know, I work for myself. Essentially that, you know, I get up at 7:30 in the morning, take a shower, take a dump, obviously. And got some coffee going, then do the show. It's unedited, pretty much. I mean, I clean it up here and there, release it, and by 10:30, you know, it's my work day. And then 5 o'clock comes, I'm done. I mean, it doesn't take that much time to do what I do. I do it purposely that way, that it could just run stream, chat room, whatever. It all goes live. I save throughout the day. Normally, I'm reading RSS throughout the day anyway. If I see something that's like, okay, that's breaking news, that's something that people are going to be talking about, or just stories that are just lend themselves to humor. And I go, okay, that there's a new Kickstarter thing for this, whatever. I'm like, okay, that's easy to make fun of. And you just do that. Then I have a format sheet, and then I just you know, sponsor this, sponsor that. What time did I dump? Dump, done, get on, let's go, let's do it. And just don't worry so much about, was that a great show? It's like you're going to be doing five a week. Doesn't really matter.
I think some people maybe get caught up in sort of doubting themselves, because it's funny. I always talk to people who say they want to start something or do whatever. It doesn't matter what it is. But then they're like, well, what if it's not good? What if it's, you know, it doesn't. And they find all these ways to not do what they really want to do.
Mm. Like it's not going to be good.
Well, yeah, because they've.
Yeah. If you're constantly
they just make
doubting
excuses.
Yourself. Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like that scene in Back to the Future with Marty's dad. Or actually, no, first it was Marty and then it was his dad. Oh, well, what if they tell me no? What if they say I'm no good? I don't want to cause confrontation. It's like that. It's exactly that. You're never going to do anything. You're never going to know if you're good or not if you don't try.
Right.
It's the opposite of trying.
And look where he ended up before they ended up changing the timeline.
Yep. In fact, it's funny. There's a conspiracy theory that Doc actually interfered to make Marty not an idiot. So, like, the entire movie, the entire point of the trilogy is to make Marty not a terrible person.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know how this conversation veered into time travel.
I know. It just reminded me of that, the whole not wanting to do stuff. Anyway,
but I look at things when people say that they don't want to do something, or like I didn't realize how much work, or whatever excuses they want to make. I always look back at the fact that if you really loved it, then that's what you'd want to do. So in the same sense of doing comedy, there's nothing better than getting on stage with a microphone and making people laugh.
Right.
The second best thing is getting on stage with a microphone and bombing. Like, that's the second best thing, getting on stage and literally eating crap for a half an hour. That's still better than anything else. You're still performing. Right. You're still getting better. You're still getting up there. If you only like the 1% of things of something that you want to do, and the other 99%, then you really don't like it. Then you really don't.
Or not enough. You don't like it. Clearly, you're not passionate enough about it to get off your ass and go do something.
Yeah. Right. Like, I don't like waking up in the morning. I'm not a morning person. And yet, I decided to do a morning type of show.
Right.
But I'm looking at it from a perspective of what would I, if someone gave me a nationally syndicated morning show, like radio show that was from 6 to 9 in the morning, like a normal kind of drive time type of show. Would I say no because I don't want to wake up in the morning? No, of course. That's what I want to do. That would be my dream job.
Right.
It would involve me getting...
You find a way to make it happen, basically.
Well, I mean, if that's what I want to do. If I can't wake up and do a show at for a half an hour at 9 in the morning, then that's not what I want to do. Like, that's the point that I'm making. So when people say, I want to start a podcast, I want to start a blog, I want to start... Like, you want to start a blog, but you don't like writing. Well, then you're screwed. You want the glory from that, but you don't want to actually do the work. So you really don't love to do that thing, and that's fine.
Right.
Just admit that to yourself.
I admit that I hate writing. Exactly, and I think that's where most people fall into that kind of that category, right? Is that they just they maybe want the results or the fame or the notoriety or whatever, but they clearly as whatever it is, that's not really what they want to do because they're not prepared to do it.
Well, the thing
like it can't feel like a job, right? You have like it has to be something that you're energized to do it like every single day, and that's you know that it makes you happy. You can wake up in the morning and say, you know, that's I'm looking forward to my day. That's what I want to be doing.
But it has to be a job. Like in order to take it seriously, you have to treat it like a profession. You have to
absolutely
treat it like this is the structure in which this thing operates. And you have to like every bit of it. You don't have to love every bit of it.
Right.
But the fact, just like with comedy, like one booker that here in the Midwest would say all the time, it's like, we pay you to drive. We don't pay you to perform. Because comics will perform for nothing, really. It's you're paying us for all the other crap. You're paying for the six-hour drive, the staying at a crappy hotel, the 2 days of doing nothing. And having to deal with emails back and forth or phone calls back and all that other crap. The half an hour, the 45 minutes you have on stage, that's the best part of your job. That's what we do it for. But we do that for nothing. It's everything else. It's getting that gig. It's driving there. That's what you're getting paid for. But if you're not willing to do that for nothing, then how are you ever going to get to that point in the first place?
Right.
Yeah, you're not.
And you may not be good enough. That's the lie in the business guru,
yeah,
whatever product, the rah-rah-rah self-improvement space or everything.
You try it's like, you hard could, enough and practice, you'll be awesome.
Well, that could be true, but that's the bare minimum.
Yeah.
Right.
Most people stop there. They don't try hard enough. But there's no guarantee that you could try hard enough for three years
absolutely,
and get nowhere because you're just not good enough.
Oh, and I've known people who are some of the hardest workers that I know, and that, you know, they're trying to make, for example, a business work, and they're putting in, you know, 80 hours a week, but they're never successful, right? They're not millionaires. I mean, maybe some of them are making a living, but the harsh reality is that the majority of people that try to start something themselves, they're not famous, they're not rich. You know,
well, one of the things I can't stand in that type of whatever space, the self-improvement, when anyone online tells people like this is how you do something to be successful or whatever, it always focuses on the tactical. It always focuses on the technology. It always focuses on the little crap. What time should you tweet? That type of crap. You know, how many words should a blog post be? Those types of things. And no one talks about, or very rarely, talks about the content and talent angle of anything. They don't talk like,
Yeah, because how do you teach that?
No, of course you could teach that. You could teach the concepts. You can't teach someone, you can't teach someone how to be funny.
Right.
I can't tell you how to be funny, but I could teach you how to write a joke. I could teach you the concepts of how to construct a proper joke, just like any writer would do on a late night talk show. Mm. Doesn't mean you could write great jokes. No, but you'll learn how the construct of what a joke is, what mindset you should be thinking of when you see a news story, how you turn that into something else. How do you write a top 10 list? How do you, these are all content based things, just like you could teach someone how to use logic and edit a podcast. You can't teach someone, you could also teach someone concepts on how to interview people, but you can't teach someone using that type of methodology on how to be talented on the microphone.
And I think most people are capable of being decent at something, but I really feel that certain people are just better at something than you are. And that's just the reality. And, you know, all the hard work that you do in the world is not going to make you the best in that field, right? And I see that with acting all the time, right? Some people like for me, like, you know, acting, like I have to work really, really hard to improve my craft. But then I see some people, you know, you see people that kind of just fall into the business and they just get lucky for whatever reason. They meet the right person at the right time. And sometimes they just have natural ability and they're able to perform really convincingly. And other people like me have to work way, way harder and put way more time into it. And that's just, I have to accept that. And if I'm not willing to accept that, then I just better pack up and go home. Otherwise,
the difference that you're seeing is coming from because you're just starting out,
right?
And you're in the beginning of your journey, and with anything, I'm not saying that you'll ever get to the end of your journey. That those that are instinctually talented at the there was a quote or some story about Mickey Mantle after he retired, the Yankees asked him to come and coach like minor leaguers or whatever, the hitting coach, and he came and said, you know, show these people how to swing. And Mickey Mantle said, I just swing the bat and hit the ball. Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to teach you. I just swing and hit it. Yet you take look at someone like Tony Gwynn, who is a master at communicating the skill of picking up the spin on the ball, the release point from the pitcher, moving your feet, like the very technical things that Mickey Mantle knows instinctually. He doesn't know that he knows it. He just knows it.
Right.
And those are the types of things in any profession. Like you say, you have actors that just seem to get it. It's like you could get it just like they can. You just have to go through all the experiences to realize that you're trying to play the game and they're playing the game within the game. It's very similar to poker, because it's something that I did professionally, I guess, for a living for a while. And when I first started out learning poker, you know, I had to put a lot of work, mental energy. Just, okay, what positions, what, you know, study cards. I was doing online 8 tables at a time, revisiting hand histories. I was treating it like a science. And I'm like, I need to understand why you do things in a certain ways mathematically. And the more and more you do it over and over and over again, it becomes instinctual to you. And then once you get your, just like times tables when you're in grade school. 4 times 4 is 16. You don't think why it's 16. You just know it's 16. But now that you know it's 16, you could get on to calculus. Because if you can't remember your times table, you're never going to understand, you know, the hidden stuff in the universe, the physics and, you know, theoretical whatever, the membrane theory, all that type of crap. So just like in poker, a lot of people are focused on that first stage. They get to that first stage and they put in all that work and they're still getting beaten by people more like me, where that's all instinctual now. I've gone through all that. And now once you start playing against better players, you see that there's a game within a game. It's like everything you thought you knew about poker is completely wrong. It's like, wow, there's now a second level to this stuff. And that's the way it works in almost any type of profession, like with acting. Like you'll get to a point, Alex, maybe 5 years from now, that you'll hit an epiphany. You'll start performing extremely well and going, oh, I was trying to force it before, but I didn't realize, you know, when people study for roles and they, you know, become the role, you know, from a beginning actor, you may look at that and go, like, how could that ever, like, that doesn't jibe with me. Like, I don't get how they do that and how they could perform well, but that's the game within the game. Like, that's how they became good. They got all the fundamentals down. Where they've done it so much that it's instinctual that, you know, they could cry on demand. They know how to get into their mindset of, you know, whatever, if it's method acting, like thinking of a time where you were in that position or you said reliving it in a more realistic way. To you, that's hard. You have to work at that. That's instinctual. They'll cry literally on demand, not realizing they're thinking about their dead grandmother. Like it's just in their brain. It just works that way. And there's some people that are more naturally talented. They don't even have to work at that. And they get to that level, like, immediately.
Yeah.
And some people have to work towards it. But But that's what it is. It's the level beyond the other level.
Right.
And in every profession or any other skill set, it works the same way. Comedy works the same way. You tell me a joke, and I could tell you, okay, it's not fun. I could tell you why a joke is funny, but I can't construct a joke that uses that same technique in exactly that way. I just know. You could tell me something, and I go, that'll work, and that won't work. But, you know, I don't know why I know what I know. I just know that joke will work, that joke won't work. That you replace this word with that word, and you'll go, well, why do I have to replace that? It's like, I don't know why, but that will be funnier.
It sounds like you're talking about intuition, that gut feeling. You know, it's like you can't, it's not scientific.
That's not natural. You're saying that it's natural. Like, some people just have it, and that's BS. No one just has it. You work towards that. You work towards where that becomes instinctual, where a guy raises in late position, and you know it's a steal raise. You don't know why you know it's a steal. It could have been the way he looked and the mindset that he was in. It's like you're just processing things a million times faster than you did 3 years ago, where you would have to really put a lot of mental energy into figuring out that he's steel raising, or to figuring out that that joke is funny. That's why a lot of professional comedians now could churn out a new special every year, is because, like, they've gotten to the point where, you know, they could write jokes and throw out jokes at a much quicker pace because they've gone through 10 years of, I think this is funny, but it turns out it's not. I think this is funny, but it turns out it's not. Turns out if I change this around, it would be funnier. And you do that over and over and over again, then it becomes instinctual.
I think most people quit.
Yeah. Most people quit before they even get to that point.
And I think one thing I've been trying to do, and this is something I learned from somebody else too, who's seasoned professional, is it's really important to be introspective and to know yourself and know what you're comfortable with and know your limits and your own range too. And one of the things that I find, at least in acting school, is, you know, you're exposed to do all these different auditions and play all these characters. And a lot of them that I play, like, I don't really care. I just think they're stupid characters. I don't do well because I don't have, like, I don't care about these characters that I have to play. But when I actually can pick a role that I find interesting, I'm able to put way more of myself into it and do well. But of course, you know, you have people like your coach that says, well, you know, when you're learning your craft, you need to be able to, these are the things that you need to be able to do and play any character convincingly, which is fine too, I think, especially during, you know, the early stages of learning something new. But I'm sure once I get to the point, you know, after a few years of training under my belt, and I maybe start, getting some actual work in the industry, I think it's also going to be important for me to know what I'm actually good at, you know, to play to my own strengths. Otherwise, I'm just not going to be into it, right? And I think you can apply that to, I guess, to a lot of other things too, because I know what my own strengths are, and, you know, I love learning new things as well. But I know there are certain things that I do that I'm particularly good at. I mean, obviously, it has to do with the fact that I've been, you know, working on those things for many years. Like, I've been playing guitar for 20 years, and I'm still nowhere near where I want to be. But because I've been doing it for this one thing for so long, I know I'm a pretty decent guitar player, but, you know, I look at all these other things that I see people doing, like, I need to be doing this, I need to be doing that, and why am I not doing that, or why am I not doing this as well as that other person, right? So I think sometimes I overlook that thing that you were mentioning about how sometimes it's not just instinctual, it's not, you know, somebody has been doing this, even though they may not be aware of it. They've been doing this thing for quite a while. So it's hard to kind of, I guess, look outside, to be objective and to kind of look at it that way.
Right. I mean, I've seen beginner comics. I mean, I've mentored people that the first time on stage and they're doing material, and it's not you know, well crafted, but it's like they do decently. I'm like, that I can know immediately this person knows how to write a joke.
Yeah,
they don't know how they know. It just they've been funny for most of their life, and in their subconscious experiences, and you know, with the quick quippy one-liners back and forth, they just got the hang and instinctually figured out how to really construct a proper joke. And now they're doing comedy, and it's like, oh, now it seems like to other people, it's like, oh, they just have it. Like they just got, oh, this is your first time on stage? Wow. You really know what you're doing. It's like, no, they don't. It's just that they've learned all the skills that you'd learned for 3 years in real life without even realizing.
Right. You don't see the full picture. You're not really seeing what their past experiences were like. May not be immediately obvious. Yeah.
Right. I mean, I was writing.
Go ahead.
No, I was writing comedy when I was in, you know, middle school, high school. Didn't know I was writing stand up, but it came from, you know, having a father who was in an improv troupe. You know, it's a typical Jewish New York family. So, you know, dinner table is all, you know, jokes and stuff. And listen to comedy albums. You know, my parents, you know, 60s and 70s comedy albums. And just like how babies learn how to talk and read and stuff like that, it just comes to you. And all of a sudden, it's like, I'm just right. I could write funny stuff. I don't know why I know what I know. And apparently I write jokes very concisely and well, and especially for my age. And it's like, oh, okay, that's why I could get on stage the first time when I was 17. And people look at me and be like, yeah, you've been doing comedy for 5 years. It's like, I have no idea. I didn't realize how difficult it was for you. Like, why can't you write a joke?
Yeah. And it's interesting because especially with comedians, I always hear different stories. You know, sometimes they, you know, they come from families where, you know, people were, you know, they were surrounded by funny people. And sometimes you get these really funny comedians who didn't have funny parents and they weren't really surrounded by that. So I always find that interesting. Like, where do you pick that up?
A lot of times it's a defense mechanism. Like, you're not the popular kid. Typically, right. The popular kid doesn't become the comedian. It's the kid that uses jokes as a weapon. I never got beat up in school because I was friends with the jocks, because I followed sports and I was funny. So although I couldn't play well and hang with them in that extent, you know, I was last picked for the, you know, basketball after school or something like that. And, you know, but I was funny and new sports, and you know, comedians are always, almost always, from an outsider's perspective, and that's why it always amazes me, especially in the day and age of social media, with comedians having to apologize for what they say. I look at that and I just, like, really, we've gotten to the point where people don't even understand that a comedian is not a real person.
I'd be surprised.
Well, it comes from the fact of, and you see this at, if you read Salon, if you read salon.com, you'll see an article like this, like every third week about, you know, like Jon Stewart or John Oliver, you know, or Bill Maher, or any political kind of comedian, commentator, radio show host, something like that, they're doing harm for the liberal cause, or it's a cop out. A lot of times they say, when Jon Stewart says, I'm a comedian, not a journalist, I shouldn't be the news.
And right, then,
you
know, right.
They say, well, that's a cop out. You really have an agenda, whatever. It's like, as a comedian and any other comic, we're the only ones that truthfully and understandably know what the hell he's talking about. Everyone else doesn't really get it. Like, no, when John Oliver says that his first priority is comedy and the second priority is comedy, that he really means that. It's like, well, what you're doing with your show is really exposing what, like, they're only doing that because it's funny. If it wasn't funny, they wouldn't do it.
And then you have
it's such a simple perspective that people don't get. And then when you see comics making off color jokes on Twitter, and they're like, well, he's a racist. No, they're just doing what they think is funny. They really have no stake in them. They're an outsider. They look at you and go, you're as much of the enemy as anyone else. It's and the then, comics versus everyone else. There's either you're in our brotherhood or sisterhood or transgenderhood, whatever makes it not be offensive. Mm-hmm. It's us versus the world. And only that's what the comic type of term is. Like, we get it. When we watch Daniel Tosh or Sarah Silverman or someone say, you know, really offensive quote unquote stuff, it's like they don't believe this is all entertainment. That's the stuff they find funny. And the more taboo it gets, the more funny it is.
Right. And then you have on the more extreme end, you have people like Stephen Colbert who basically plays this character. But you still see people who think like that. That's how Stephen Colbert, he must be like that 24/7. He's that guy. It's like, no, he's not. That's just a character. But people, like you said, it's people that don't get that. And it doesn't translate. I guess, you know, maybe it's just the medium, but it doesn't translate well. But you would think if you're following somebody like a comedian on Twitter that you would get that, you know, whatever they say should be taken with a grain of salt. That it's, you know, you shouldn't treat it differently than going to see them at a club. It's a routine, right? And sure, they might throw the occasional thing out there that's not really necessarily meant to be a joke. They might voice an opinion about something about politics, you know, related that may strike a chord with someone. But still, I mean, yeah, it shocks me every day when people don't get this.
Everything goes to the service of the joke. Everything, no matter what it is. I'm going to have this view only for the sake of this bit being funny. That's really all that matters. And of course, if you're liberal minded, you're going to tend to veer toward sides that are more liberal voiced. And that's when you get penned. It's like, oh, you're a progressive comedian. It's like, no, it's just like, I'm progressive. So most likely I'm going to be talking about, you know, the material. Comedians talk about what they know. That's why you see a lot of comedians that talk about flying on airplanes and driving around the country. And this is the stupid thing that I saw, because that's what we do. So if you're a progressive comic that follows the news, you know, you're going to see that if you're watching MSNBC, you're going to talk about what you see on TV. But still, at the end of the day, you're looking at that as a source of comedy material separate from what you believe. What you believe is completely separate. Like what I do on my podcast, and I yell and rant and say nothing matters and whatever, is just an exaggerated viewpoint. Most of the time, I couldn't care less about the subjects that I'm talking about. All I see is that there's humor here. Let's dig down and see what we could find. Let's see what could be funny about this. And sometimes it goes off into really offensive territory. I'm just digging. I'm going, what it would be funny if it was this way? It was funny if that way. But I don't have. At Jordan Cooper, the person, is completely separate from the exaggerated version that's performing on a podcast or on Twitter or anything like that. And it really irks me, because a lot of the backlash you see from more famous people than me is that most of it comes from what I call the professionally offended. And you see that at comedy clubs also. You see, someone's going to find something. Something going to take it the wrong way, not realize that this is a performance, that this is not the real world anymore, and we're going to find something to be offended by. Just because that's the way that they get attention. And it's the same. It's to me, it's worse than heckling. I'd rather a drunk heckler yell and say something stupid and me put them down than someone come up to me after the show saying that I'm a horrible person because I made fun of X group. And the thing is, I didn't even realize I did it.
Yeah.
Like they point out something in a joke. Like, did it have to be a him? I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Well, in the joke you said about going to the something, something or other, you said the word he. Well, couldn't that person also have been a she? And in my head, I'm going, are you kidding me? Like, I'm subconsciously now sexist because I used a pronoun in the sense of a joke that has nothing to do with that. Because it's just whatever. It's he. I could have used she. I could have used it. I could use anything. But it's something that I didn't even think about. And then, of course, then I get told that's worse. Because now it's inside subconsciously that you're sexist. But these are the types of things. It's like, I'm just trying to tell jokes.
I'm using
the vernacular. And a lot of times with the comics, we're using the vernacular that the public uses. And even if the public's wrong, we're going to use what's going to be more referential. So instead of saying he or she, that doesn't serve the joke. I'm just going to say he. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I get it.
That's what most people say.
I feel like maybe for a comedian, maybe there should be a little bit more leeway, but I definitely think, I don't know, from my own personal perspective, like just in everyday talking to people, like I do try to be aware of what I'm saying, and that if I refer to somebody, I try to make sure I use a term that is not offensive, because I think it's important to be aware that you're saying that, because I mean, so many people say things that just they don't think about it, and that's not good either. But I do agree that, like, if you're a comedian, if you're doing a bit, if it starts affecting the material and like the flow because you have to correct for all these little things, then it kind of defeats the purpose of the joke. I mean, as long as you're not out, you know, going out of your way to be offensive, obviously. But
even if you are, what's wrong with that?
Well, I mean, you could be offensive, but it doesn't mean anyone's going to like it or come back to see you again.
Of course.
But that's your right.
You're right. Absolutely. Like, it is your, you can do that.
I think one of the big traps we fall in is tone policing. It's like, oh, well, you can't say it that way. Well, it doesn't really matter how you say it. What matters is the content of what you're saying. It's not like,
yeah,
just because you say something in a way that's like, ooh, that sounds kind of aggressive and mean, you could be saying something inspiring and hopeful. But if you're tone policing, it's like, no, that's wrong.
As Bill Burr has put it several times, because he complains about this, most comedians do complain about this. He says, he's like, I'll do an hour set. People will be laughing. The same person will be laughing for 50 minutes. And then I'll say something that hits them the wrong way. And all of a sudden now I'm not telling jokes. I'm making statements. Like now they're not jokes anymore. Now they're ideologies that I'm spewing. Like, no, it's all comedy. It's all comedy. I'm not on the street corner with a bullhorn yelling my nonsense. It's like, no, I'm on a stage at a performance that you paid to come see me.
Yeah.
Like this is all comedy.
Right.
This is all whatever.
And that's what really bugs me. Like, you know, whether it's somebody who pays to go see a comedian or you know, you're following that person's work, and to just flat out complain about it. It's like with Twitter, like there's the unfollow button. Why don't you go ahead and click the unfollow button if it bothers you that much?
But these are the professionally offended.
Yeah.
Professionally.
It's just like, you have no life. If that's all that you know, if you live to complain about people like that's just sad.
Yeah, but I see that online all the time. That's my bugbear. And it may be against both of your sentiments or whatever on society, but I'm against it. I'm an advocate of free speech in its absolutist sense, that there's no such thing as offensive.
Yeah.
It's words.
And I feel
until someone goes the extra 9 yards or whatever and does something discriminatory.
Sure.
Words are just words. And if they're stupid, they're stupid. The more you let them talk, the more other people will think are stupid. But to go after people, I like with the John Ronson article with the Justine Sacco or whatever, Jonathan Chait wrote about it. And then people are yelling and screaming and going, you know, that, you know, that this person's tone deaf. And I look at that and I go, they didn't go far enough.
That's why I don't.
The whole point of free speech as a concept, I'm not saying from a legal perspective, because that's all has to do with the government, you know, not being able to crack down on you. But the whole concept of free speech, the whole point of it is to protect the minority against the tyranny of the majority. That's the whole point of free speech. By saying something that's extremely popular, you don't have to protect that speech. If 99% of people think that's what it should be, You don't have to protect that type of speech. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously someone that yells, that says that, you know, black people should be killed and hung up, you know, KKK people, they're wrong. They have the right to say that, even though they're 1% point nothing percent of the population. Those are the easy examples. We could look at them and go, they're stupid. Like, I'm not going to prevent them from talking. I mean, as long as they're not doing what they say they're going to be doing, that's
right.
Say whatever the hell you want.
Yeah,
I don't have to listen.
As long as they're not committing any crime.
Right. But I don't want to use the slippery slope fallacy, but how about, you know, I take a look at abortion mm-hmm. as an issue that is not 99 to 1%. Now, I'm pro-choice. You know, I'm sure. Pure freedom or whatever. But, you know, the people that even you could even say gay marriage. That's maybe an 80-20. I think 80% of the population is that doesn't care. Like, come on, get married. 20%, you know, there's enough people that are against it. I think they're stupid, but no one's going out and trying to get them fired. No one's tone policing them because
yeah.
there's enough people that you can't get away with that you can't get away with that. But mm-hmm. what happens if it gets down to that point? What happens if something that's 51% in the majority could get snuffed out? You know, the 49% could get snuffed out because that's what the tyranny of the majority is. So I take a look at the not neo-Nazis on Twitter or whatever. They're trying to rally people around them, whatever. Let them, because who knows what viewpoint I have, what ridiculous nothing. I don't like making coffee in a certain way. Somehow it gets down to that point where now I'm ostracized and being attacked online for not brewing my coffee the correct way. I know this is hyperbole, but that's how I view it. It's like, it's just until they do something, just let them talk, let them be stupid and don't tone police anything.
Right. Yeah.
And just because I don't agree with you doesn't mean that I can't be friends with you. Like, you could have a different viewpoint, which I think is also, you know,
isn't that what
too.
Inclusivity is? Isn't that what people say? Isn't
exactly.
See, this is the reason why I don't speak on Twitter about this type of stuff. I rarely do on podcasts, because if I do, people are going to call me racist. They're going to call me all sexist and a million names in the book. Mm. I don't have a stake in the matter. I come from the perspective, just like a comedian, I'm an outsider. I have no sides. All I could do is point out hypocrisy. That's what comedians do on both sides. So, yes, I lean more liberal when it comes to social issues. I lean more conservative when it comes to fiscal issues. But, you know, I'm on your side. Like, I'm on everything, you know, equality up the ass. I'm for all of it.
Yeah.
But I'm just not for hypocritically going about doing so. Don't be hypocritical about it.
Yeah.
Right.
It's perfectly fine for me to say that the most qualified person should get the job.
Yeah.
Everyone would agree with that. Now, if it happens to be a man, that doesn't make me sexist in that specific case. If someone get, you know, oh, there's four members of some company's board that are male, like who says that was because of sexism? That could just be happenstance.
Yeah, sure.
There are other ways to solve issues like this other than in-group, out-group politics and just calling each other names. And just because, hey, if I don't have a female guest on my podcast for 6 episodes, that's because I'm sexist. Maybe it's just because I'm just looking to get the most entertaining people. I'm not even thinking. I'm actually doing what you want
me
to do.
I think
is
I
not think about gender whatsoever.
Right. But I think the argument too on the other side, which I tend to agree with, is that, you know, as you know, privileged white men, we tend to. We tend to sort of hang out and talk with the same kind of people in our own little clique. And I think it's also important to make the effort to find, for example, you know, intelligent women to bring into the group to get that other perspective. And that's where the diversity aspect comes in. And I think a lot of people and, you know, even companies don't go to that effort, which is problematic. I believe anyway.
No, I agree with you. And I also agree with the opposite perspective. As you should know, my mantra on anything, that it's okay to be a douchebag as long as you admit that you're a douchebag. And it's okay to be, we're privileged white men. We have it easy. I agree. We have it easy. Isn't it great? You can't blame me for taking advantage of that, right? You can't blame. I realize that. I realize that my dealings with the police are go very easily.
Right.
Like, you know, I realize that. I know it's a problem, and I'm all for solving that problem.
Right.
When I deal with the police and they ask me whether or not the handcuffs are too tight, and they open up the window for me when I got arrested for a parking ticket violation that I didn't pay for 5 years. And some cop showed up at my door, but like he let me get dressed. I mean, like he was just there waiting for me. Like
yeah.
He knew I wasn't gonna pull a gun or anything. He saw my record, so it's like there's nothing on it
yeah.
or anything. But I think to myself, and I know I'm. This is going to be such a different confrontation if I was 27 and black, black
sure.
male.
Absolutely, yeah.
I know
but,
it.
And I think it's
but Alex, it doesn't make me a bad person for taking advantage of the fact that yes, I get treated better.
Mm-hmm.
Don't make me feel bad.
I agree.
I already understand that I am, but I can't change anything.
Yeah.
Right. I am a 35 year old white male.
You can't change who you are, but I think
right.
if you can exploit something, people will exploit it. That's just how it is.
Right.
But I think as it's also crucial that as white privileged people that we are in a perfect position of power to actually speak up against these issues.
See, you got that wrong. I don't agree with that whatsoever.
People listen to us, though.
No. Hold on. Do people listen to you? No.
Sure.
I'm
saying us as in a general, like, white man.
But that's the problem. See, that's the problem. Then you're getting into in-group, out-group dynamics. Yes, people will listen to people in power. Most of the people that are in power are white privileged men, right?
Right.
People will listen to Mark Zuckerberg. People will listen to John McCain. People will listen to those people. They're not listening to me. I'm a privileged white man. Doesn't mean people listen to me specifically. So don't equate me to someone else that's in. People will listen to Barack Obama. He's not white. He's just a person in power. So if you want to rally the 99% 1% movement, you want to do Occupy Wall Street, I'm all for you. There's no race and gender involved with that. People in power are going to evoke their privilege mm-hmm. in everything that they do.
And
just because I'm a white male, I rent the house, I pay my bills, mm-hmm. I'm broke just like the next guy.
Yeah.
Don't look at me like I'm somehow different than my next door neighbor who's in the same situation. He just happens to be Hispanic. At least I understand I got a head start, and probably all white men got a head start in just the grand scheme of civilization. I understand that. What am I specifically supposed to do about it now, other than pay my bills and live my life?
But doing something is better than nothing.
Yeah, but something to me is realizing that and at least attempting to treat everyone equally, and that's what I believe that I do.
But that's the bare minimum. Don't you think?
Yeah. Okay. But that's the bare minimum. I believe in equality, complete equality. I don't take anything else into account. But do I have to do more for someone else for the sake of me being in the same boat as them?
Okay, but
getting more of a head start.
When we're talking about people of position in a position of power, and I don't mean just people in politics or celebrities too. But for example, okay, I'll just give you an example here. If I'm in a position as a manager at a company, and my entire staff is all men, I'm in a position. I have a choice where I can explicitly go out and try and find, you know, talented, experienced women that I can bring in on my team. That's my choice that I can do that. I should be doing that. A lot of men don't do that in companies.
No, a lot
we
of
can start. We can start there.
Alex, a lot of specific people in power don't do that. And as well, in combination to that, is that they can only deal with the hand that they're dealt. So I can't just by assumption of seeing a web development team of 8 white men and go, that's because of sexism. I can't assume that. in some cases, it is. You're right. They could go out and find qualified. You could. I guarantee you they're out there. But you can't put it all on their shoulders on the sense of that's the reason why it is this. Like you're not going to
solve not what
the
I'm
problem.
Saying. That's not what I'm saying. So, for example, like one of the last companies that I worked at, I wouldn't say there was an outright sexism issue because, I interviewed women as well. And we, you know, our company was pretty much just a bunch of dudes. But that doesn't mean, even though we have, let's say, we're perfectly fine. We've got qualified people. They just happen to be guys. That doesn't mean that I shouldn't try and bring in people of another gender or another race to bring in some diversity into the company, because there are inherent benefits to getting a different perspective on a problem that you're facing, right? There, because I really feel like you're losing something if you're not going out of your way to try to find other people.
Yeah, but that's an assumption. That's not every case. What I would want from, let's say, Apple, for instance, it's a company that I use a lot of their products. Like I have a MacBook Pro, I have an iPhone, I have all the privileged white male gadgets that we all have. And I would like my Apple TV not to constantly reboot on AirPlay.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would like.
Oh, God, me too.
Right, okay, you get it, right. I want the Wi-Fi issue on Yosemite, which I think is fixed. I want that fixed. I don't care who does it. I don't care how they do it. I just want it done. So if you're going to tell me that a company that I buy products from, I want the most qualified people to do it. As a boss, if I was in charge of a company, I would say to anything, whatever you're making, it could be a product, it could be a video game, it could be a broom in Home Depot, like. As a CEO, I want you to hire the best people that are available. Like, here's the prices that you pay. Here, we need someone that does this thing for $70,000 a year. Find the best person. I don't care. I don't care if they have three heads, four legs. I don't care if they're black and blue. Just hire the best people. Now, if they go out and hire the best people, and it just so happens that eight of them are men and one is a woman, doesn't mean they're sexist. They went out to hire the best people.
Yeah.
Are you calling into question? Like,
no, I'm not.
Them
I'm
internally,
not.
Are you calling into question that they didn't go that? Because then you're getting to me. It's more sexist because then what you're saying is the Mitt Romney binder's full of women. To me, I'm not. Of course, I'm not female, so I can't. Whatever explaining thing that you want to throw in there, prefix explaining. I would find it more degrading if someone, if as a Jew, if someone said to me, give me a binder full of Jews because we need to hire one of them. You know, we need to find more Jews in our accounting firm or whatever. But to me, that's more degrading. It should be, we should find the best people. And if it just so happens that it's a man or a woman, it shouldn't matter.
Yeah.
Shouldn't
but
matter
I think
whatsoever.
there's also a bigger issue too of, I mean, not just women too, but I mean, I think, and I've seen this in a lot of companies where it's, you know, it's straight women or gay men or whatever, people that are, you know, not of the majority, and they feel uncomfortable in their work environment and they're not telling people because it's not that the company is going out of their way to exclude people or make them feel uncomfortable, but it's that we're not thinking about these people. We're not thinking about these things to make.
Who's we?
I'm
Who's
saying company,
we?
People, just. You know,
no, you're generalizing
businesses.
Too much. Certain people in certain companies. Yes, I would agree with you. People, men, this is what I don't. This is in-group, out-group crap. It could be certain cases and certain situations. Yes, I agree with you. All men. I don't want to be the. Yes,
I'm not saying. I'm
no,
not saying
men.
That. I'm just saying there is an issue. I'm just trying to open up the discussion about how do we solve these kinds of issues? How do we get people thinking about these? At least thinking about these things. Men, but be it men, I'm not targeting men specifically. I'm just saying, how do we get people to think about this stuff?
It's not yelling at people. I could guarantee you that. It's not, if you want to be inclusive, then be inclusive. If you don't be hypocritical, like tone policing and word and speech policing is not the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Getting people fired is not the way to do it. you know, sending mail or whatever those type of actions, or even in the matter of let's put a prominent female or insert minority figure here into a position of power and that will solve it. No, of course it won't solve it.
No.
We're talking about issues that take long periods of time.
I mean, this is it's systemic.
In systemic issues, all you could do is speak out about it without attacking people. And over the course of time, culture changes. You take a look 100 years ago compared to now. 100 years ago, gay marriage would be like no one would even talk about it.
Right.
You'd be ostracized. Now it's like, it's going to get to the point where it's going to be perfect. It's going to be one. Our grandchildren will look at us and go, I can't believe you lived in a time where people thought gay people were like beneath you.
Well, I mean, clearly, without question, we've as a human race, we've made a lot of progress in 100 years. But like you're saying, for systemic issues, this takes time. This is going to take a long time to fix these problems.
Yeah, but the more that you're writing blog posts, calling out someone's use of the word rape in a comedy bit, that you're fight number one, you're fighting for page views, and number two, you're actually hurting the cause by pointing out things that in the grand scheme of things don't matter, and then claiming that, no, it's those little things that we need to change everywhere. Because, then fine, let's have a fucking dictatorship. Because that's what you're saying, is that we can't say the word this, we can't say the word that, we can't say the word... Why don't we talk about corrupting money in politics more so than whether or not so-and-so senator, is allowed to... It gets sexually harassed or something. Like, who cares on the grand scheme of things, having women being thrown acid in their faces in the Middle East? Like, why don't we start with the low-hanging fruit?
Kidding.
Why are we spending 1,000 words on what Daniel Tosh said at 11 o'clock on a Tuesday night at a comedy club and then debating it?
Yeah.
And then having the gall to debate it while
Because that does nothing.
So much low-hanging fruit. Right. That's the hypocrisy I see. That's why I get upset at these people. And I go, you're being disingenuous. Right. You're doing this to call attention to yourself. You're not actually looking to solve the problem. Because once the problem gets solved, no one cares about you.
Right. Like you said, the low-hanging fruit. Like people throwing, men throwing acid in women's faces. Like, let's start by throwing those people in jail. Let's use the law to fix these problems.
Well, I mean, it's in another country. I mean, different culture.
But
what ends up happening, Alex? This is the things. These are the things that, I mean, literally give me aneurysms. Maybe not literally, obviously. This is what Bill Maher has fallen into, is that you call it, this is the outrage cycle. This is the reason why I do a show called Internet Outrage Machine. This is how it all propels everything, is that You call out, let's say you call out the Saudi Arabians that have spray acid on a woman's face for showing too much leg or whatever they do that's stupid out there. And then one of the core reasons they do that is because it's a theocracy. Mm-hmm. Like you're dealing with people that take religion or a religious text way too seriously, way too literally, and warp it for their own cause.
Sure.
Warp whatever
always
they
find. Yeah, and you always see examples of people just finding ways of twisting words to make. I mean, it doesn't even have to be specifically religion, but you see people like twist and turn anything around to fit their own viewpoint.
Right. But what ends up happening is that now you call it, now you're like, okay, we need to help those women. Though we need to help the marginalized people out there, that these are the low hanging fruit. Like it's pretty hard to not say that people should not have acid thrown in their faces for showing too much of their heel in public. Like, okay. And then you go, but one of the root causes is that, well, it's a theocracy. And then you say, well, in order to solve this problem, we need to root out theocratic, countries. We need to root out the fact that women are being subjugated primarily because of a religious text. Whether or not the actual text says that, it's due to that. They're guided by something and they're twisting those words. But then you give an opinion like that and then go, well, do you have something against Muslims? You can't say that. You're now you're Islamophobic.
Right.
I'm like, I'm pointing out. So someone looked at a book and said, according to this book, it says to do that. I don't care if the book is the Dr. Seuss's rhymes. I don't care what it is. It has nothing to do with that. But you can't not admit that that's one of the root causes. And you see someone like Bill Maher say that very thing, and now he gets slapped for being the tone policed and speech policed or whatever. It's like, can we even talk about the problem without the talk about the problem? Like, there was one article I saw, and I'm sorry to get on my soapbox, but there was the other day about a woman who was at a college in a debate. Like, the whole point of them going to the college was to debate free speech. Like, they were debating the concept of free speech in general. Like, it was a feminist debate on free speech. Like, okay, you get it. This is a progressive debate on free speech. And in the context of the debate, because they were pointing things out, were using the vernacular of offensive. They were using the N-word. They used wetback. But they were using it in an academic construct.
Right, right.
They were using it in an academic construct. These are feminist liberal people that are talking about the concept of free speech and why these words are bad. And there were people protesting or whatever afterwards, or some article in the school newspaper saying that it was hate, that debate in and of itself was hate speech because they used these words. But that's what I'm talking about. You end up hurting the movement more by doing stupid crap like that.
I agree.
And just talking about it rationally.
Yeah. So the another thing, I just want to play devil's advocate for a bit, but and I want to hear from Michael and Jordan on this. But how do you feel when you have someone who identifies themselves as a feminist who is constantly complaining about mansplaining, which I'm sure you guys are familiar with the term. How does that make you feel when you see? Now, there are outright examples of, you know, patronizing and down talking to women, but how does that make you feel?
Well, I think mansplaining is a very specific kind of being patronizing. Like, there's being a patronizing asshole, like, oh, well, it's actually this way. And then there's mansplaining, which is like, well, listen here, lady. Like, it's a different tone. It's like, because you're a woman, you're wrong, and I'm going to explain why. Whereas someone who's just a patronizing asshole is more general. Like, oh, well, of course it's this way.
Right.
But mansplaining, they are specifically calling out someone because they're a woman, and therefore they must be wrong. That's the distinction I make, anyway.
And what about you, Jordan?
Well, I have a much more controversial viewpoint.
Yeah, go ahead. That's what this show's for.
I view the term feminist, by the way. Feminist, to me, I view the same way as I view the word racist.
Okay.
Say, I view feminist the same way I view ethnocentric or bigoted or anything. I'm not a feminist. I'm not a racist either, which means I'm for equality. So to me, the word feminist, what does that mean?
You don't like the label.
Well, you're coming from the perspective, just like you said, mansplaining. Like, we're talking about in-group, out-group dynamics, which is ridiculous. I'm fine with dealing with people.
Right.
Just people. Being patronizing to anyone is you're being a dick. Okay? Doesn't matter whether or not you're a man, you're a woman, you're talking to you're Jew-splaining, you're transgender-splaining, you're whatever you want to throw in there. Being patronizing is being patronizing. Typically, I view, quote, anything splaining is when you're taking offense with something that you're not. Like, you can't speak from a sense of you shouldn't be offended by that because X, Y, and Z. And just like I have a comedian friend who's handicapped, hates the word handicapped. She prefers crippled. That's what she is. She's crippled.
Right.
She has no problem using the
but
word
even
crippled.
That word today now people find offensive. Like any word. It almost seems like any word. Like everyone has to tread on eggshells now. Like any word.
But the thing is for her. To her, everyone else is being patronizing.
Right. Right.
How are you being offended by me? Let me be offended by the word.
I absolutely
you're not
agree
handicapped.
That.
That's right. What I view, whatever quote splaining yeah. is, that's what I view. That's why anytime I see a male that's views themselves as a feminist, to me, that would be more insulting. But I see the word feminist. And to me, you're stating something like if I said I'm a humanist, like it would make it's redundant. Like I'm for equality, right? I'm for equality. Men and women shall be equal. I'm 100% for that. Does that make me a feminist? No, that makes me I'm an equal person. What is whatever. Do I agree with the fact that men, especially privileged, white privileged, anyone, but men tend to have, because of the way civilization has been throughout thousands upon thousands of years of time, have the leg up per se on a lot of things. I agree with that. Yes. Do I agree that we should now give another, we should now do the opposite for the sake of evening it out over the next 10,000 years? No, let's everyone treat each other equal. From this point forward, can we all come to an agreement, world? 7 billion people in the world. Can we just treat everyone equal? Can, like, if she has a position and you have a position, we both get paid the same? Can we do that? Can you just look at a resume? Can we not make it so that that when you go down the street and a woman's wearing something, whatever, that we don't look at them any different if it was a hot guy? I'm for all of that, but I'm not for let's automatically assume that anything that happens is because of some patriarchal system. Like once you get to that point, you end up becoming the boy / girl. I don't want to be offensive. That cried wolf or whatever. The boy is wolf not offensive? Should it be another animal? I have no idea. These are the types of things I'm talking about. But you end up becoming the boy who cried wolf. Like, take a position and be like, show out specific things that have happened that are like undeniably, yes, that person is a bigot. They sexually harassed that woman at work, and this is what happened, and she deserved all for that. I'm also for men that are in the same position, for any person that's in that position.
Mm-hmm.
But let's not go out and start, someone will listen to this podcast and I'll get a tweet. I'll get some DM or something like that saying that I was being, I'm a sexist asshole for saying that I'm for equality. I'm just, you understand, it's a no-win situation. That's why I don't even like talking about it. I see the tweets go by and I'm like, I like all you people, but you're all being hypocritical. Just treat mm-hmm. everyone equally. Let's not point out every little fact of some right. Satya Nadella said something on Microsoft stage. She said X, Y, and Z, and we're going to point out the 18-second clip and go, well, why are we talking about this? Why are we writing blog posts about 18 seconds a CEO of Microsoft said? Why don't we talk about the managerial positions underneath and how people got up the ladder that way and try to get more women in those positions, that if they're qualified? Why aren't we talking about that rather than what some asshole said on some
or
stage?
Or busy talking about what someone else said instead of talking about, well, how do we get more women interested in education for these fields? Because that's something nobody ever talks about. I mean, people do talk about it, but not nearly enough. And that's the real problem. That's why there aren't enough qualified women for some of these roles, because women just are put off by the entire thing.
How do you know, Michael? See, what you're doing, to me, what you're doing is patronizing. Are you a woman? No. Then don't speak for them. Right? You don't know.
Well, I mean, there are numbers.
Michael, you don't.
There are numbers at universities for people entering these programs.
Right. And universities, and if you take a look at college in the past 20 years, there have been more female graduates than male graduates.
Yeah. That's also true.
That's true. That's correct. That's a fact. What they feel, I can't talk about. I can't. When the video or whatever where the woman goes through, you know, and says, you know, I feel like people, you know, they're gawking or whatever, catcalling or whatever, you know, all I looked at that video is like, let me look at the hypocrisy here. And it turns out that it was hypocritical, but I'm not going to, I don't know what it feels like to be catcalled. So I can't tell anyone that you shouldn't be offended by that or you shouldn't feel uncomfortable. That's just what guys do or whatever. Yeah. I will never do that because I'm I'm not in that position. I don't know how it feels. It probably feels like shit. It probably shouldn't happen. But by doctoring a video isn't going to solve that. Being hypocritical, having an agenda will not solve that.
You
could just talk about it. You could. There's no reason why you can't write an article saying that this is what I feel like when I'm being catcalled.
Mm-hmm.
And then other women write, this is what I feel like being catcalled, without pointing out that men are horrible. They just go, this is my experience. And that the certain men on that certain street and those construction worker dudes, that make me feel that way. But don't look at me and at the byline at the end say, what are you going to do about it, man? Like, what? I'm not the one doing it.
I feel like...
What am I supposed to do?
I don't have a particular issue with certain labels, like calling yourself a feminist or whatever. Because, I mean, I get it. I get what the term means. Like, you know, it's a simple word that basically tells somebody this is what you believe in. You believe in equality, you believe in diversity, you believe in people men and women having comparable pay in work, in the same job and that type of stuff. But I feel like sometimes it may be using certain terms, for example, like mansplaining can be used right, but I feel like sometimes it can go a little too far. Like I've seen some examples where, you know, like if, even on social media, for example, like, you know, a scenario where you have, you know, a guy replies to a woman, somebody posts a question about something. It could be a tech related question. And then you'll see a guy reply to it. And I can see that person was trying to be helpful. But then they get a response saying that they've been mansplained to because, oh, you know, I'm a professional woman in tech and, you know, don't you think I already know this? But sometimes I feel like that's taking a little bit too far because maybe that person was really just trying to be helpful. Like, do you really need to kind of just beat them up for that?
Well, that's what I call the professionally offended. And I understand. The thing is, I have the perspective to understand why they act that way. Because when I was younger, I was typically the youngest one to do things. I was in an umpire association when I was 16. I was umpiring games and most of the other people in the organization were 30, 40, 50 years old. I was 17 when I started stand up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was performing and I would be the youngest comic by 10 years on a lineup or going out and doing road gigs. And, I was discriminated against in several specific instances that I knew I was being discriminated against because I was young, but because I was so new to the industry and young and stupid, obviously, because I'm 17, 18 years old, that ended up painting everything under that light. Mm. Why didn't I get this? How come I got the Tuesday spot last week, but not the Tuesday spot this week? It's probably because they think I can't handle it because I'm young. Why didn't I get this audition instead of that audition? Why did he get this instead of that? Because once it happens, you know, I was carded once on a road gig before. Like when I was like 19 doing some, you know, in Jersey or something. And the bouncer there, you know, laughed at me when I said I'm the feature. Like I'm here to feature. And like, no, you're not. Mm. Like, you know, like I was trying to sneak in.
Right.
That's a definitive instance of he treated me differently because I was young and couldn't believe that I could possibly be one of the professional comics on the lineup. But once it happens to you two or three times, you end up using that as an excuse for every other wrong in your life, in everything. And that's what happened to me. And it killed me by the time I was 20. Like there were managers, there are certain people in the industry that wouldn't, you know, didn't really even want to work with me. Like not necessarily because I was yelling from the hilltops. I wasn't, but it's kind of like I was becoming a pain in the ass because I would constantly bitch about that type of stuff. And then looking at it now as a 35-year-old or even when I was 27, when I moved out here to Louisville, it's like, no, I didn't get those opportunities because I wasn't good enough. I know now.
Yeah.
Like I look back at my act from when I was 18 and go, how did I possibly think that I should have gotten that Letterman audition that everyone else seemingly in my level kind of at that club got
right.
And I didn't. And I look back at those comics and go, oh yeah. Cause they had five more years of experience than me. I thought I was at their level, but looking at my material, no, I wasn't ready for that. I would have never gotten
that's a
Letterman set.
That's a slippery slope. I think so many of us fall into that trap, right? That we use that excuse for a lot of things, and we can't. It just clouds your own judgment. You can't see that. Maybe you're just not good enough in that particular.
Or maybe in a lot of stuff. Maybe it's like Hanlon's razor. A lot of things. There's no reason for it. There's no psychology behind anything that happens or why someone got this, why this thing happened, who got hired there. It's just that you don't chalk stupidity for malice or whatever. So the fact that some company's bored or someone got hired here, most likely in most situations, it's just dumb luck.
Right.
Just being in the right place at the right time. There was no conspiracy behind any of this. In certain specific cases, sure. But once you start painting that worldview on everything, that's when I tune out. That's when I look at my Twitter stream and go, what are you people constantly outraged about? Take one thing that should be major and stop thinking that just with me using the word he in a joke that has nothing to do with any gender. It just so happens that I needed a pronoun and to describe a store worker. It could have been anyone. Just he. It's he. Most people use the word he. I'm not going to say he or she, and then I'm not going to say he or she or a transgendered person or something. It's just he. I wasn't thinking. There was no malice or anything. And for you to spend your time to point that out shows that how much other stuff are you pointing out that has nothing. Like, I know that I wasn't doing it for a sexist reason. I'm a comic. I'm just writing a joke. So if you're going to start pointing out 100 other things. Like, what, 99% of those things? Who knows? If you could be against me for using a pronoun in a joke, I can't take 99% of what you say seriously. So the 1% of time when you're dead on correct, I'm not paying attention anymore.
Yeah.
Just to me, you're professionally offended, and you're the boy who cried wolf, and all you're doing is flapping your wings, trying to get attention, and I just look at you and go, I can't take anything of what you say seriously.
Yeah, and it doesn't look like they're showing any signs of letting up. It's like every day, you know, we see these professional complainers.
Yeah, I almost think part of it is because no one really knows how to fix these issues, so they do the only thing they can. They look at something small that they can, quote unquote, do something about. Because it's the easy way. Like, it's easy to go up to you and go, I was offended because you said he. It's easy to do that. It's hard to look at something like acid being thrown in faces and go, what can we do about that?
On social media just is such an easy outlet to enable that kind of behavior.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Like, if you're just some random Twitter account, you can spout whatever, whoever, and it doesn't matter.
But admit it then. I don't care. Just admit it. Say you're professionally offended. That's fine. Then I'll listen to you then at that point.
But these people don't have the foresight to say anything.
Of course not. But that's why I look at it as hypocritical.
Right.
But of course, if I call that this is what ends up happening. Like, it's a cycle of nothing. It's a black hole. I choose to not call attention to it much at all. I've not mentioned anyone in particular. I've not mentioned any specific incidents in particular, specific hashtags or specific anything. Why? Because I know it's a vortex that only makes it worse. These are people, these are sociopaths that the more you poke into them, it's like giving them power. It's like one of the, villains at the end of a video game, that the more you shoot at them, the more they get power type of thing. So I choose not to, like, I'll subtweet, you know, I'll make little, point out little articles or jokes, but I'm not going to give any venom to someone else, because all it looks like, because when the problem comes down to the B-level people, like you have the sociopath in the middle, and then you have the circle of people that don't do any due diligence right around them.
Yeah.
People that just quote, listen and believe. And I look as an outsider and go, I'm not going to believe anything until I see it. I don't trust anyone whatsoever. And now that just enables them. And now if I point out anything, if anyone points out anything, now you're against them. Now all of a sudden I'm sexist. I'm a bigot. I'm a racist. People are going to call up my clients and go, do you realize how racist? You're working with a racist. You're working with a, he's homophobic. He's transgender. I don't think there's anything I've ever said that was, again, that was nothing other than equal for everyone. There's nothing I've ever said other than, hey, you know that thing that you just said? I think it's a lie. And here's why it's a lie. And why, or here's this little thing that like with Daniel Tosh calling out of the club, like he executed a joke. All comics understood what he did. Most normal people didn't. When he goes out, when he says to the crowd, what do you guys want me to talk about? And then some other person, some guy, yells out rape. And then Daniel Tosh doesn't say anything. And a girl yells out, rape isn't funny. Daniel Tosh goes, what? Wouldn't it be funny if five guys just raped her right now? That's a joke. That's a joke structure. It's showing irony of the thing that she's getting offended by ends up hurting her in the end. If someone yelled out toaster and the girl yelled out, toasters are never funny. Toasters. And Daniel Tosh said, wouldn't it be funny if five toasters fell on her head right now? It's the same joke. It's a comeback heckler joke. It would have been whatever it was. Just so happened it was rape. He didn't wish rape upon her. Nothing like of that sort even happened. As a comic, I understand exactly what he did. And then explaining that a million times to people, they're like, well, by now you're perpetuating rape culture. And now you like, we're not doing any of that. People are yelling shit and we're on stage and we just made a joke. There was no foresight. There's no manifesto behind this. There's no nothing behind it. It would have been whatever. If she would have yelled out Snuffleupagus, it would have been Snuffleupagus fell on her head. It would have been that. And that's the type of, those are the types of things that are like, if you can constantly be offended by that, how are we ever going to have a rational conversation and fix these problems?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mike.
Really, the problems with the guy that shouted rape in the first place, right? Like, why did he shout that?
Why not? It's a taboo subject. That's all he just wanted attention. Probably.
Yeah.
The other thing, I've fallen into this trap, but I feel like, you know, when you get, let me just give a concrete example here. Like, for example, a lot of people harp on John Gruber for the talk show for, you know, mostly having just, it's just a bunch of white dudes having tech conversations, right? I don't think that's inherently bad per se. And he's had the occasional, guest on the show who happened to be a woman. But I feel like sometimes when the conversation is constantly, like, it almost seems like people are saying, like, oh, you know, especially on a podcast, like, what do they, does that person need to have a woman on every single show in order to be acceptable to, like, to deem it acceptable to society? Because I feel like that's overlooking the bigger actual issue of equality and diversity and actually doing stuff like speaking up about these issues, like the low hanging fruit stuff, like we were talking about earlier with, men throwing ass in women's faces, like just saying somebody needs to have a woman on every single episode of a podcast. Like, I don't feel like that's really contributing anything to the actual problem. Like, that's not solving a big problem. I don't know how you guys feel about that.
Like I said before, to me, that's more insulting. To me, I think that just saying that is more insulting than anything.
Yeah. I mean, that to me is just tokenism. It's like, we have to have a woman on for the sake of having a woman on. Right. It's like, no, that's not how it should be at all.
For instance, on the Internet Outrage Machine, I don't care about diversity in and of itself. I have females on. I have people of multiple races on. I don't think in terms of that. I care about, this is an entertainment program. I need people that are against one another. I don't care how they're against one another, but they, conflict makes more entertaining. If it's four people agreeing with each other, that's going to be boring. Mm. So I'm looking to pin, if I book someone that thinks a little bit more conservatively, I want to get an uber liberal on. If someone thinks a certain way about something, I want to get someone the complete opposite of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it just so happens that, okay, female versus male, especially in a lot of the stories we talk about on that podcast, because a lot of the outrage has to come with some type of gender dynamic. Like, it's not going to be as entertaining if it's four white guys talking about it. Having a woman allows now, well, you're a woman, let us know. Like, it makes for a more entertaining program. I don't care about diversity. Like I said, I'm a comic. I just want there to be conflict. So if these stories are going to be X, Y, and Z, I'm like, I need to get diverse opinions for the sake of comedy. I don't care how they're represented. I don't care who they are.
Yeah.
I'm just doing it for the sake of that. And that's why most companies, you could track it all the way back to there's not enough, you know, young, early childhood STEM education or whatever. But at most companies, I guarantee it, 99% of the time, that boss is looking to assemble the best team that he can at the end of the day. And if his version of diversity is making sure that we have a 38-year-old front-end programmer versus a 23-year-old back-end developer, someone that knows multiple programming languages, that type of stuff comes first before whether or not it's male or female.
Yeah.
And they're just looking to assemble a good team so they could build a product.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't point out every example and act as if everything is because of sexism. And that's what that's what's holding us back from actually solving the problem.
Right. And I feel like saying that, like I've heard people say, well, just you know, this person, because this podcast is just a bunch of white dudes, they're all agreeing, you know, and they just all agree with each other, which is not the case many times. Like a lot of the shows that I listen to, just because you have a bunch of white straight men getting together talking about something doesn't mean they're all going to agree with each other. They're individual. They're different people. They're going to have different viewpoints and they're going to butt heads on certain topics. Yes, they might agree on certain common things, but that it just
also,
I think this is oversimple. You're oversimplifying. No,
but also you're being even more patronizing because it's not like in the case that you mentioned with Gruber. I mean, it's one of many, whatever. You just happen to point out the talk show. It's not up to you to tell him what his job is.
Right.
Like, it's like when people say, well, if someone has a big enough platform, like you take a look at someone like Bill Gates, who's out there trying to cure malaria, which is great. You know, Warren Buffett's out doing, you know, people are doing philanthropic work. That's great. We should applaud them. But it isn't their responsibility. Someone that has $1 billion, you know, Rupert Murdoch, it's not him. He's a bad person for not giving to charity, even though he does. Just like you take a look at Gruber in the talk show. Well, he has a big enough platform in the Mac/tech space that he should be promoting. Like, it's not your show. It's not his responsibility.
Exactly.
It's his show.
Exactly.
Some people.
And if you don't like it, don't listen to it.
He's not doing it because he's anti, he's against females. He's putting on the program he wants to put on. Just like you watch TV and people.
And he's not doing anything that is harmful. And if you want to start a show, your own show, and have a more diverse cast of people, then go ahead and just do that. It's actually better to just go ahead and put out that show. If that's what you want to see, you should actually do something and contribute rather than just complain about somebody else's show, which you can't influence anyway.
You can't force someone to contribute to the cause. That's why I say, right, I'm for equality, but I also realize that I'm a douchebag that got privilege and I'm not going to take advantage of it. And in the cases where I can help talented people out, I will help talented people out, regardless of whether or not they're male, female, have 14 heads, have 73 legs, they're blue, purple, it doesn't matter to me. But it's not my responsibility. I'll do it out of the fact of, you know, I wanted to be nice or something, or, you know, it makes me feel better, or I don't know, for whatever reason, but it isn't my responsibility to, you'll get backlash for that. It's everyone's responsibility. No, it's not everyone's responsibility. You can't blame me for looking out for myself. I'm going to look out for my girlfriend. I'm going to look out for my dog. I'm going to look out for my family. And that's all I'm responsible for. So if you're saying that because I don't put a person on my podcast, I'm somehow degrading from the cause, it's like, really? In the grand scheme of things, that's not going to really matter. It's not my responsibility.
In the grand scheme of things, it's meaningless. Right. It's doing nothing.
But don't put, you go out and you fix the problem, and don't put the responsibility on me. It's not the president's. It's not even the president's responsibility. It's people's responsibility. If it's your cause, you go out. Don't get your hate mob against me because I don't agree with you. But I'm not doing anything against you. Like I said, I'm for equality. I'm not going to get involved with the outrage machine. I think it's stupid. I think it's sociopathic.
Yeah, that's an excellent point.
Now that I've turned away all of your listeners.
We maybe have one listener left.
But I'm watching my words even talking about it. Yeah. For a comic, for someone, I've been doing comedy for 17 years, and I tell poop jokes, and I'll use the word cunt in a tweet, but for me to talk about any of this type of stuff, I'm scared. Yeah.
That's understandable.
To me, tell me, truthfully, am I not speaking rationally?
No, you're
absolutely rational.
Political right. correctness has I'm not become a racist, rampant I'm not a over big... the past decade. Like, it's at the right. point where if you even speak one word out of turn to an audience,
yeah.
you can be fired, your life can be ruined, people will
yeah.
demand your death.
Oh, yeah. Like, internet mob mentality.
It's scary.
You can get people fired.
It's really scary. And it's not just political correctness. Like, Gamergate... A woman just trying to say, I think women should make games, or I think there should be more women in the video game industry.
Don't
death
get me
threats
started.
And whatever. Like,
don't get me started. Please. Please don't.
Sounds like you have something to say on this topic.
No, it could be inferred by everything I've said so far.
Okay. All right, fine.
All I can say is that there's a reason I don't talk about it. Let's just say I don't... I understand both sides, and it's all in-group, out-group. The whole thing is in-group, out-group. It's apolitical versus political. I've said this on my podcast.
Sure.
Similar to when it comes to Gamergate, there are obviously, like I said before, there are individual people that are fucked up that'll do things just like with the religious text or anything on both sides.
Right. The extreme, it's the extremists right. in any group, right?
Right, but for the most part, this is... What we've been talking about the past hour is the concept of, quote, Gamergate, is political right. versus apolitical. That, and you see this in any industry or any outside of politics, obviously. You see this in atheism versus religion as well. Mm-hmm. There's one side that believes that there's a political motivation behind everything, and the other side that just wants to do the thing they want to do. So it really comes down to, get outside the ethics and journalism, whatever bogus argument, is that when I go to Recode, for instance, and I want to know what stupid thing Lenovo did to put bloatware and adware on my computer, like, that's why I'm going to Recode. If I start seeing that I should be ashamed of myself for using an operating system because I'm a bigot on that site, I'd be like, I'm just here to find out about tech news. Mm. Like, what? Like, I'm going to your site to tell me if Destiny is a good game. Not 14 articles on why I should be able to feel ashamed of myself for playing another. Like, that's really what it's. You're making a political right. movement out of an audience that maybe they should be aware of it. And I'm perfectly fine. You know, you read some of the tech blog. Yeah, every once in a while, there'll be some, you know, kind of activist type of, you know, this, we should really take a look at this type of stuff. But at the end of the day, I'm there for tech news. Once you start right. preaching to me, I'm like, what the hell is this? And then I could understand the video game people. I'm not a video gamer. I don't know. If I was going to a site, you know, I'm looking at for the sports scores. Like, how did Liverpool do in the Premier League? And then every other article, it seems like, is, you know, if you watch soccer, you're a racist, you know, because that's what happens in Europe a lot of times. You know, that people get, they throw bananas on the field, which is, it amazes me. And that if you like this club, because these three people that threw bananas on a field makes you racist, and then every other week I get told I'm racist, wouldn't I be upset and be like, I just want to get the soccer scores. Why can't you just write about the soccer and not to preach to me that I'm something, that I'm a bad person? So that's why I look, it's politicizing something that most of the audience doesn't believe is political. And then they say, stop politicizing it. And then the in-group, out-group dynamics happen, that by stating that it's not political, you therefore are a sexist. And then it goes back and forth until the outrage machine makes it into some ridiculous thing that now all of a sudden it's a hate group and people are swatting each other and all this type of
crap. It's a vicious circle. I mean, this all the stuff that we've been talking about in this episode, I mean, can be applied to politics and gaming and really anything too. Like, you know, it's like, you know, I was just thinking recently about how, you know, a lot of big public online publications, you know, that review video games, I'm not going to single them out or anything, but they gave, for example, Destiny the Game of the Year award, and a bunch of people are like outraged, like Destiny's a terrible game, like, you know, all these magazines have out, you know, they overlooked all, you know, all these other games X, Y, and Z that should have won. It's like, it doesn't matter. It's like, it, you can't please everyone. You don't have to like the game. I don't think Destiny is that fantastic. I think there are many things they could have done better in the game.
Yeah.
I don't have to play it. If someone wants to give it the Game of the Year award, good for them. It's their opinion. I don't have to like it. I can play what I like. And you know what? It doesn't, it's like with any type of award thing, giving an award to anything, you're always going to piss somebody off. They're not going to always agree with my viewpoint. I may think another game deserves it. Whether it does or not is totally irrelevant.
But that's not politicization. Like, what you're talking about is normal. Like, I like my iPhone. I like Android. You know, those type of debates, they're not political. Yeah.
But it's the other issue that I have with people is, like, people feel that with, like, anyone reviewing whatever it is, a game, a movie, they think that they can be totally objective, and that's impossible. There's always going to be some level of bias on the reviewer, right?
Yeah, but there's
the professional critic. I mean, I have agreed with many opinions that, you know, of certain movies that Roger Ebert have, and there are many movies that he gave a terrible review, which I thought that movie was fantastic. So, I mean.
Yeah, but there's a difference.
Does it matter?
No, but you're still not talking about politicization.
Yeah.
Whatever that word is. Like, for instance, I do not believe, I pretty much guarantee it, that a movie like Blazing Saddles could come out. Blazing Saddles is one of the greatest comedies ever. From a comedic standpoint, great. It's Mel Brooks, great comedy.
Yeah.
Really offensive, especially back in the early 70s, the sentiments, I mean, we had, you know, Archie Bunker on All in the Family, which was satirical, by the way. And now if something came out like Blazing Saddles, there'd be people protesting, saying that it was racist.
Right.
That, you know, the racist caricatures or whatever. But that's the point. It was supposed to. It's a comedy, people. It's a comedy, people. That's what I mean by politicization. Like, if Destiny was voted Game of the Year and people were upset that it wasn't, shouldn't be the Game of the Year, not because it was a bad game, but because on level 2, scene 5, a nipple was out somewhere. Like, that has nothing to do with the game. Like, if you want to compare the fact that, you know, I don't like the iPhone because of something to do, but not because I don't like the iPhone because Johnny Ive said something bad at a convention 10 years ago somewhere. It's like, what does that have to do with the phone? Like, you're just inserting your agenda for the sake of the criticize the game for the game. That's all we're asking for. Just like with we have a problem with the politics on television. No one debates the policy. They debate the horse race. Someone said something stupid. What is it going to mean for his next campaign? Not like, why don't we talk about the thing that's stupid or the anti-vaxxer crap that Rand Paul, that in politics it happens all the time. The vaccine crap that Chris Christie and Rand Paul, both of them are for vaccines. They're for. they vaccinate their kids, but they're also for a small government. But because, you know, the one side says they have to be like they get backed into a corner where it's like, yeah, we have to be for, if we say that we're for vaccines, our base is going to say, what, you want the government to tell you what to do? And then if they say they're against vaccines, then the liberal side will be like, what, are you not against science? There's no way to win because everything's going to be turned into politics. They can't just say what they think. Rand Paul can't just say, hey, you should get your kids vaccinated, but it shouldn't be me that tells you that. But he can't say that because then he gets attacked by both sides.
Yeah, there's a lot of it bothers me that we have to self censor so many things now. Like you see this in I've seen this in podcasts, I've seen this especially in journalism and people writing blog posts where they always have what's called a trigger warning, where they'll say, you know, the content that you're about to read or listen to contains X, Y, and Z, whatever, right? You know, so be warned. I feel like, can we not let the person decide? Like the person makes an explicit choice to click on a link and read something. Why don't you let them decide how they feel, how they're going to feel about it? Like, and I don't really feel like if there's an article that talks about, a sensitive subject, like let's say rape or murder, some grisly murder or whatever, like, I don't know. I just feel like putting a trigger warning now on everything is unnecessary. Like, I can make my own decision about how I feel about that topic. And if I don't feel comfortable, I can stop reading I can stop reading that article. I can stop watching that show if it bothers me, right? Like, when does it end? Like, I don't feel like we need to put trigger warnings on everything.
No, you do. You need to, because a lot. I'm not going to say people in general or millennials or whatever, is that more and more in reading the blogosphere or whatever, is that we live in a time with all the social media, all the blogs, you could be fragmented. I think that echo chamber filter bubble type of thing is working much quicker than most people realize, and probably under cause than people think, is that anytime we see anything outside of our bubble, we're shocked by it. We're shocked. What do you mean people think this way? What do you mean something like that happens? And the world sucks. Like, let's agree on one thing. Most of the world sucks. Most of what happens in the world sucks. It's not all roses and green skies. What a blue skies, green grass, whatever. And by shielding yourself from it, doesn't make it go away. So to me, trigger warnings and microaggressions and all that type of crap is just another way to incubate and pad yourself in from the real world. And the real world is scary. And I don't mind the trigger warning. I don't mind all of that. It's their choice. The writer could make that. The people that read it could do whatever.
But for me as a writer, it bothers me if somebody's like, well, why didn't I read this? And, it bothered me. I'm damaged now. Like, why didn't you put this warning?
That's what I'm talking about. You took the words right out of my mouth. Shouldn't affect what I do. Like, I'm going to write what I write. I'm going to do what I do. Like, I don't do what I do to protect you. I actually don't even care about you. Like, it has nothing to do with you. None of this has to do with you. And it's you could go on Tumblr, and it seems like you could go down to subgenre, and there's three people that are offended by something that I've never even heard of, that I've literally never heard of. Or sometimes they're part of some type of group, some type of they think they're white, but they're black, and then they have 14 heads or what. There's something. There's some type of little segregated group that believes they're being discriminated against, and I'm looking at this going that you can't be discriminated against when no one even knows what the fuck you're talking about. And then you're going to blame me for writing something that I use the wrong pronoun, and all of a sudden that sent you into a depressive tailspin. Well, maybe you should get psychological help if a pronoun can do that to you.
Yeah,
maybe it's not me. Maybe it's you. At some point, maybe it's you.
Yeah,
especially with something that you chose to read. Like, you chose. Well, like, I didn't even.
Exactly.
My clock were orange. I didn't open up
all of this stuff bothers me because it's It's taking the accountability away from that individual.
Right.
Right? You're making me feel bad for something that you decided to read or listen to. And it's not my responsibility.
Well,
I'm going to say what I'm going to say.
Right.
And you don't have to read that. You don't have to even agree to it. But to tell me that it's my responsibility to put a warning at the top of whatever I'm writing just so that it doesn't offend you. Like, I mean.
Yeah, but you have to take that to its inevitable extreme to get around to the beginning of this discussion. That if you from a objective standpoint, Alex, if you think trigger warnings like that, like if someone blames you for them not being there and they're like, oh, I was exposed to something that I didn't like, you have to allow the neo-Nazis that protest in the streets, the Westboro Baptist Church, the God Hates Fags people to do that also, because that's your version of that. Like they're not going in your face. There's not a Nazi knocking on my door, calling me a Jew or a kike or any. There's nothing. They're not coming to me. They're saying, you know, they have their white power blogs or whatever that is. They're crappy people on Twitter. Like, am I supposed to? Hey, you didn't warn me. I clicked over there. I don't have to listen to their stuff, but I'm not going to tell them to shut up. I could choose just to not read and look at that.
Yeah,
but of course. What people will say, what a lot of liberal, very uber liberal people would say, well, we need to get rid of that. What they're doing is they're now spreading it to stupid people that'll also think that way. It's like, well, why don't you just get to those people before they do instead of shutting those people up? If what they're saying is so stupid, that's why with the whole, creationist debate type of crap, that's like, if what they're saying is so stupid that the earth was done 5,000 years ago, like, you shouldn't be concerned that you should allow them to go and spread that to people because it's so stupid. Why would you even believe that? The fact that you're giving any credence that someone stating that black people should be hanged or whatever, you know, that lynched, we should shut them up because people will join them. It's like, well, then you really have a very pessimistic viewpoint on humanity then, if you think that someone's going to be influenced, that if someone walks down the street and marches like that, that people will just be joining them left and right. Like, you're the one with the pessimistic viewpoint. I'm viewing it from the fact of let them go. Let everyone see how stupid they are.
Yeah.
So we solved anything? Have we solved all the problems?
We have not solved the world's problems, but I think we've given some people some food for thought. I think it's opened up my eyes to sort of my own perspective and way of thinking too, as well. But it doesn't. I guess I'll just say it doesn't bother me if somebody, you know, and the whole self-censorship stuff. If somebody else wants to do that, it's fine. Just don't make me feel bad. Don't put the onus on me to police my own work. That's all.
I just say don't be hypocritical. It's perfectly fine. I say that when it comes to, quote, people that fight for equality, which I am for the 8 millionth time, I'm for equality.
And for the record, I think we all three of us agree that we are
But there's a difference. See, I'm for equality. You have to choose whether or not when you make statements, are you for equality or for reparations? And if you're for reparations, that's fine. But then state it that way. There's a difference. Equality means that, hey, there's a man and a woman, most qualified wins. Done. Shouldn't matter what gender they are. Reparations means qualified man, qualified woman. Let's just give it to the woman because men have already gotten jobs before. To me, that's reparations. Just give it to the most qualified person. I don't know how much clearer can that be. If you think that we should put, we should look at gender or any other minority, marginalized, whatever adjective you want to put there, and say we should hire them, we should promote them, regardless if they're the most qualified, then what you're stating is reparations. You're stating affirmative action. You're saying that we should have the lesser qualified, marginalized person ahead of the more qualified person. I'm saying let's not even take any of that into account. I'm for equality, which means if the Indian woman, whatever, transgendered woman is the greatest programmer since sliced bread, fuck it. Give her the job. Mm-hmm. Great. Mm-hmm. Go for it. Don't even look at the names on the resumes. Just give the best person the job. And that's fine. But we shouldn't be saying, well, we need to have, I want to start a company with all women. And then what you're saying is that you want to have a crappier company. If you want to have a company with all women. Because what you're stating right now is the complete opposite of equality. You're stating that, well, if you're like, well, we're going to have a lesser quality company, but we're going to give more women a chance. I'm for you then also, because at least you're honest. You're not for equality. You're doing this knowing that you're doing
it. It's tough.
You understand what I'm saying? Just don't be a hypocrite.
I'm conflicted on this because, someone I really respect. Like, I really respect Brianna Wu and what she's accomplished and the fact that she's fighting for women in tech and that type of stuff. And she's very outspoken about that. I think more of that needs to happen. And she has correct me if I'm wrong. I think she has an all female.
No, she has several men on her team. Yep.
No, she has. Okay. All right. So, okay. But yeah, it's mostly women, but I think I feel slightly conflicted because I feel like on the one hand, I agree that, like, if you set out to start a company with all men or all women, that's obviously, there's no diversity there. But on the other hand, I think for women too, just because a lot of women don't feel safe in the tech industry and don't feel like it's not a welcome environment, that's also problematic and something needs to be done about that.
I mean,
but it's not, I don't think how you solve that problem is by saying, you know, if you're a woman, I don't think you solve that problem by saying I'm setting out to start an all
female because dev team that's right now. Isolation. Which doesn't solve anything. You're saying, well, let's have companies with only women and let's have companies with only men. It doesn't solve things to do things that way,
right? Because you're back at square
then
one.
You're
at
isolated.
That point.
Then you're segregating.
But if someone wanted to do a company that way, then I'll be it. Let them do. If she has all female dev, that's fine. That's fine. It's your company. Do it whatever way you want. I'm against what I'm against in anything is hypocrisy. That's it. It's fine. It's fine to do whatever the hell you want as long as you just admit to doing it. As long I'm a privileged white guy, I take advantage of that fact. I'm guilty. I'm guilty. I'm raising my hand. I'm guilty. Can you blame me for looking out for myself? You look out for yourself. Great. We do all that type of stuff. But it's the hypocritical nature of telling me what I need to do to fix your problem when I'm not part of the problem. When I'm, well, just because I'm a man, I'm a problem. Well, then now we have a problem. Now we have a problem.
Yeah.
Because now you're not for equality. You're for reparations. And that's fine. If you said I'm going to equal out what men have done to subjugate women for the past 30,000 years, and I'm gonna get my sword and go and slay men, and that's fine with me also, because at least you're not being a hypocrite. That's fine.
Fair enough.
I don't agree with that mentality, but at least you're not being a hypocrite. that's really all I look at. That's why I'm not part of either side. I'm for equality.
Right.
I'm against hypocrisy. Just say what you mean.
Sure.
That's it. I'm perfectly
be more transparent. If you're gonna say it, just be very clear about what you mean.
Right. I'm very clear of the fact that I recognize there is systemic problems with integrating more marginalized people into the tech space specifically.
Yeah.
I acknowledge that systemically. And I'm also going to acknowledge that it's not in my interest, because I'm a 35-year-old privileged white male, that I should even care about it. I'm going to admit to that. I wish it was solved. Fine. Great. But it has nothing to do with me, so I could care less about it. I'll admit that, at least. My retweets aren't going to do anything, so why am I bothering with that? Great, right. I'm for you. Go out and solve that problem. But to me, I got clients to build websites for. I'm sorry. It's not my fight. I'm a privileged white male. I'm taking advantage of it. I'm letting my family's eating because of it. Don't blame me.
Fair enough.
I'm sorry. But at least I'll admit to that. Call me a jerk all you want, but you're not going to call me a hypocrite.
Yep.
Fair enough. And I think on that sentiment, I think it's time to wrap up here. Yep. hopefully we accomplish something.
Oh, no, you can accomplish. People are going to, now I'm going to get out. People are going to listen. Someone's going to listen to this. I'm going to get it. You're going to get an email. How'd you let this racist, bigot, sexist on your show? Of course, they don't know me from a hole in the wall. That's why I don't talk about it. That's why it's stupid.
Well, we talked about it.
But how many people are going to listen to this? Who knows? It'll be on the cover of BuzzFeed. It'll be somewhere. I'll be on a plane somewhere. Has Jordan landed yet? Something will happen. I don't know.
Maybe I'll see your face on the cover of Time magazine.
Right. No, I want to know, truthfully, Alex Michael, is anything of what I've said this entire show been anything other than rational?
No.
Even if you don't agree, you may think that it should be our responsibility to do something about it. We could disagree on that. But is there anything that I've said that is inherently sexist, racist,
no,
bigoted, anything?
No, I don't feel like
that. That's the whole point. That's all I'm ever looking for is the fact that I'm just going to speak rationally about it and honestly, and I don't believe I'm being anything other than that. And I'm always scared that for some odd reason someone's going to take something out of context. And then I'm a racist. I'm a bigot.
I can't see anyone taking anything out of context unless they don't listen to the entire episode, which shame on you if you do.
For those people, we'll be releasing a specially edited version where everything is taken out of context.
Right.
Yeah. But that would be funny. I'd be for that. See, just from a
it's like, yes, I'll just string together all the awful things you said and release that.
Maybe we should just have a director's cut version of this episode where it's just Jordan swearing.
There haven't been that many swears, though.
I did pretty good.
No, you did a good job. Yeah. Well, we're coming up just on the 2 hour mark there. So, Jordan, where can people find you on Twitter?
I don't want people to find me after this.
It's like, yes, it turns into the North by Northwest. No, the
angry tweets at BlenderHD. Only if you, I'm serious when it comes to this. If I'm saying anything that you feel I'm just unaware of how sexist I am by thinking the way that I do, point it out. Other than the fact of, like, I don't understand that, like, I'm for equality. Like, how many times do I have to say that before I can't speak anything other, I can't disagree with you and still agree with you at the same time. I agree with the cause. I don't agree with the tactics.
Yeah.
Type of thing.
And that's really what it boils down to a lot of the time. People just take things too far.
Right. In 140 characters, you really can't explain yourself. That's why I don't tweet about it.
Yep.
Yeah. The world has gone to hell in a handbasket. I was like that, though, at the beginning. And will always
People have been discriminating against each other and alienating each other since the dawn of time. It hasn't changed, and it probably won't. The goalpost will just be moved. Like, people are mostly okay with gay people now. Now it's transgender people that people have a problem with. The goalpost moves.
Right.
We're never going to be completely... Everything is fine and everyone loves each other. There's always going to be that other that's wrong. Every time.
Yeah. I'm starting to agree with, for Star Trek fans out there, I'm starting to agree with Q's perspective on humanity that we're a dangerous, childlike, savage race. Which we are.
Show title.
Well, thank you for coming on again. It was
thank you.
You always provide some level of rationality and insight into the world.
That's that polite way of saying that I like stirring shit up.
No, I mean that sincerely. I mean, I recall the last episode that you were on, and drones. We were talking about drones, and you were like, "This is so far off. Like, what does it matter? Why are we even talking about this?"
Just like equality, it's so far off.
Why are we? Like, I still see. Like, I have to use mute filters in Tweetbot because people are still talking about. People are talking about Apple Watch pricing. I'm like, who cares? You're gonna find out in a couple months. Just why are we talking about this?
It's fun.
We have to. It's we have fun. To know exactly but it gets how much the Gold Watch costs, Alex. You know,
I muted the Apple Watch keyword in Tweetbot the other day, and it removed 86 tweets from my timeline. 86 tweets.
Are you telling me that there needs to be Apple Watch trigger warnings?
That's exactly. Wow, I'm censoring my timeline myself. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Impromptu. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to leave a rating on iTunes and let your friends know about us. Detailed show notes for each episode are available on our website at theimpromptu.net. You can follow the show on Twitter at theimpromptu, as well as our hosts individually at Zen Impulse for Michael Norton and at Zero Distraction for Alex Knight. As we are entirely listener-supported, you can donate to us at theimpromptu.net/donate. All proceeds go towards covering bandwidth as well as equipment upgrades to uphold the highest level of audio quality you've come to expect. We really do appreciate your support, and we look forward to seeing you next time.